Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Hello, Mpumi.
Hello, Zama. Week three. I'm so happy to be here.
Week three. Absolutely excited. You know, I've been telling the listeners that, man, but this is a life-changing conversation. In fact, I'm looking forward to it. When we started, I was like, wow, I cannot wait that it is already after five so that we can actually have this conversation. Week three, episode three, the Vision series. Thank you so, so much. Yes. Was your day good, Mubi?
My day's been good. How's yours been?
No, mine was good as well. Can't complain. Now, in last week's episode, we talked about the beauty of becoming, and we learned a valuable lesson of living in the reality that we aspire towards, helping us to make decisions within the mindset of future aspirations. And so we continue with that particular conversation. Now, last week, we had a question about whether or not this teaching plays into the new age positive thinking ideology. And our listener wanted to know if there was any biblical support for this. And I think you said you were going to look into that. Let's actually go through that.
Now, let me confess something, Zama. Last week's listener really put me through my paces. I was so stressed. I was like, I need to find scriptural backing. And I actually love that question. It challenged me a bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that we get such questions and such discourse, because it challenges us to really think about what we believe and why we believe it,
yeah,
right? So I actually found that to be very interesting. But yar, man.
Sorry about that.
I actually landed on Proverbs 23, verse 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very common verse, and I think the person who asked the question last week will also know it. And it says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he.
Yes.
Right? This verse points to a profound biblical truth, that our inner beliefs and our identity shape our reality.
Yep.
Right? In this case, in the context of this verse, it's talking about a man who's very stingy but invites you to dinner. And it says, even though they put on the facade that they're serving you food and they want you to be happy, their character is actually revealed by their inner thoughts. And who they are is stingy. It does not change, right? So this underscores that our external actions and outcomes are always a reflection of our inner states. So last week we were talking about, if you tell yourself that this is who I am, your actions will actually correspond to who you believe you are and what you say you are. There are things that as a Christian woman, if I say I'm a Christian woman, automatically that eradicates a whole lot of things that I cannot and should not do. And it's always great if I don't even have a desire to do them. But if I don't already state who I am or become that person, then it obviously influences the things that I do and the things that then are an outcome of that. I was actually even thinking about Matthew 25, the parable of the talents, right?
Yeah.
The servants who believed in their responsibility to steward well were the ones who multiplied their resources. So when they got the talents, they said, "Ooh, I'm a steward. My master trusts me with this."
Yeah.
And what happened was that because they became good stewards, they then did the thing that multiplied their talents, and the outcome was a multiplication of those talents. And the one servant who had fear and mistrust, he did not deem himself a steward. And what did he do? He dug up his talent. And as a result, the master was furious, because not only was his talent multiplied, it did not even earn an interest. So when we talk about becoming, this is the thought that we're coming from, that as we think in our hearts, so are we. There is absolutely no way I will do something that contradicts who I believe myself to be. And even if you lie to yourself and you say, this is who I am, you know what we'll be telling and actually tell us the truth? It's what you do and eventually what the outcome of what you have done is.
Wow. Beautiful, man. I think that's a mouthful. I do hope that our listener is quite happy wherever he is listening from. Now, please do take us through our lesson for today.
So today we're talking about doing, right? Remember we said last week that we first be
becoming
and then we do and then we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about using my profession as an example to properly highlight this point. So I am a purpose alignment strategist, right? And the work that I do is to help professionals who feel stuck in careers they settled for,
mm-hmm.
or quite frankly hate, to discover their purpose and turn it into a fulfilling, impactful, and sustainable profession.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what happens. My potential clients come to me and say, Bumi, I am not fulfilled at work. I feel like the work I do is not meaningful. I'm really not impactful. And I don't have the wealth to show for the number of years that I've put in my work.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about what they want to have. They want to have fulfillment. They want to be impactful. They want to have impact. And they want to have wealth. And the very first thing that I do or say to them is, firstly, with the fulfillment piece, the reason you're not fulfilled is because you are not fully filling. The minute you fill the world with your gifts, your talents, your skills, and your strengths, that is when the fulfillment will come. And I also say, where the impact is concerned, the reason you're not impactful is because you don't have an understanding of what you've been imparted with. If you had a good idea of, geez, man, I've actually got this gift and I've got this mission,
mm-hmm.
then you'll be impactful because you understand Kutupatsi Swing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with the wealth, I already spoke about the parable of the talents. We are subjecting our talents to those who can steward them better than us. And all we get in return is an interest, where if we were wise stewards and we actually used our talents, we would multiply our wealth, right? So I tell them that you want to have this thing, but there are things that have to happen first. And the first thing that needs to happen is you have to become a purpose practitioner. Because I believe, like what is shared in Ecclesiastes 3 verse 22, when Solomon was really comparing the life of an animal and the life of a man,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, really, what is the point of being a human being? I could have just been born an animal. Because we are all born, we eat, we sleep, we cry, we grow, and then in the end we die. What is really so special about being a human being? And then he says, nothing is better than, this is verse 2. He perceives that nothing, 22 rather, nothing is better than for us to find joy in the work that we do, because that is our heritage. And when we talk about heritage, the archaic definition is your allotted portion or your individual possession.
Mm-hmm.
So here, when I read this thing, I was like, wait. It is my portion to find joy in the work that I do. And over the years of working, I realized that the only work that ever gave me joy is work that is aligned to my purpose, right? So then that informed the thing that I do to get me to the thing that I want to have. But before I could do purposeful work, I had to be a purpose practitioner, one who actually does work that is aligned to their purpose. And I'm giving this illustration or this example because it really, really brings the point home.
Mm-hmm.
For us to have the things we want, we need to do the things that will give the results.
Yes,
but before
yes.
we can even do that, we need to assume the identity of, actually, I am not going to do work that doesn't align with who I am, because then I will not be fulfilled, I will not be impactful, and I will not see the world that I want to do. So everything we do will be influenced by who we believe we are, and then we can have the things that we want to have. But the premise or the preceding thing is doing the things that will help us to get those outcomes. And I want to tie this back to vision,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
that is what we're talking about.
Yes.
We've got this grand vision for 2025.
But
this
before
is
you,
what I want to have. Okay. Yeah.
Could I please interject that? I do apologize for this. You probably lose your train of thought.
It's not even that. I'm a speaker, so I speak forever and ever and ever. I have to concentrate myself that this is a radio interview.
No, that's fine. Actually, I'm loving this. So with the example that you made, you know, you would say the person would come to you and say, you know what, I'm not fulfilling what I'm supposed to do. I'm not being impactful.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm not creating wealth in the process. And when you ask them, do you find that some don't even know what their purpose is or what impact they want to make?
Yes, very, very common. In fact, the thing that leads them to me is because they say, I actually think that I will be fulfilled if I actually do work that is aligned to who I am. You know what it feels like, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they are a fish tasked with the mission to fly. Mm-hmm. It's like, Mbumi, I'm in this environment, and this environment requires this specific activity from me. Mm-hmm. And in all truth, I know that my design and my make can only do this and this activity. And this is no insult to their intelligence or their capability, mm-hmm, or their competence or their qualification. It's really understanding that my design doesn't speak to the requirements of the environment. Mm-hmm. And this is actually so interesting, because Gallup released the State of the Workplace report this year that said 77% of professionals globally are disengaged at work. And what I found is that it's not just their work that they disengage with, it's their core, the essence of who they are. So when they come to me, they already acknowledge, you know what, I appreciate what the requirements of that environment is, but if I'm being truthful, my design does not speak to the requirement. Mm. And that is where our work begins then. And when they actually realize, oh, geez, this is the problem I'm designed to solve. This is my prowess. Wait, mm-hmm, these are my passions. Oh, all of this speaks to who I can then serve, how I serve them, and what it is that I do that will serve them best.
Mm. Quite interesting. But thank you so much for that. But I distracted you on your thought. Please do go ahead.
No. So I am wrapping it up. We were bringing all of this home to vision,
yes,
right?
Mm-hmm,
to vision. So the vision people have for 2025, this is what I want to achieve. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to have at the end of the year. Then now we move back, because we are reverse engineering this whole thing, right? Mm-hmm, so before we can have those things, we need to become. So ask yourself, who am I? Because who you are will then influence what you do. So for example, if it's wealth that they're after, at the end of the year, I actually want to be a millionaire. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that all my assets are above the value of 1 million, and the assets that I have outweigh the liabilities that I have. So I want to be a millionaire. Who do you need to be? Yeah, sure, you can say I am a millionaire, but then you have to first say, I am a steward. I steward what I have well, because at the end of the day, that's really what it is, right? Stewarding your assets so well and lowering your liabilities, because that speaks to a good steward. Mm-hmm. So I am a steward. And what does a steward do? A steward does this, that, and the other, manages debt, lives below their means, makes more than they spend, has multiple streams of income. And at the end of the day, one will find that because they already told themselves that this is who I am, their actions will be influenced by that. And at the end of the day, the millionaire status will come just by assuming the identity and taking the action. So it's really divorcing ourselves from the outcome, because at the end of the day, man can plan, but it's God who decides. And assuming the only role that we can of controlling the inputs and making sure that as far as it is up to us, we are the people who do the things that would get the results if God agrees to it.
Powerful. Now, Mbumi, before I let you go, and thank you so much, man, this is actually a very, very powerful discussion. Do you find that, because we talked about fulfillment, the impact, yeah, but also making money in the process, mm-hmm, that there are people who would say, you know what, Mbumi, truly speaking, I'm not making the money I want to make. And mm-hmm, so people are driven by making as much money as possible so that they settle whatever they want to settle. Do you find that the aim, because I'm trying to imagine that, I'm not sure if though is the case in your everyday, mm-hmm, interactions, that the, mm-hmm, aim to actually make money is in the long run outpaced by passion, that you could be doing something because you really want to make the money, but, mm-hmm, not really passionate about it. You got your passions, etc., elsewhere, but it's not going to make you as much money. And so what you want to do is to make the money so that you are able to live a comfortable life. But there's passion also, and purpose in the background. So how do you see this in your interactions?
Can I just say, wanting to make money is a noble desire. In, mm-hmm, fact, it is a wise desire, because everything out there, before we can acquire it, we need to exchange a couple of rands or thousands or millions or whatever that, mm-hmm, is. So it is a noble desire. And I don't want anyone who is ambitious and career driven and an overachiever to now feel like, is something wrong with my ambition? There's absolutely nothing, mm-hmm, wrong. Mm-hmm. What I have found in the work that I do is, and I've spoken to people who on paper look really good. They look very accomplished, very successful. And this was actually my interaction when I first got into corporate. These people smelled like money. You could tell that they actually got money. They looked rich. They spoke the best kind of English you can ever imagine. The cars in the basement, absolutely amazing. And every second or third person would say to me, hey, do you like it here? Like, if you actually had a choice, is this where you'd land? And I would be like, well, yeah, I was new, man. I'm bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I'm like, yeah, of course. And their response would be like, well, for us, we wouldn't. This is for us a way to pay bills, but our passions lay elsewhere. And I realized, heck, I'm not the only one who's struggling with this thing or suffering with this thing. For people, there's really a regret or a begrudging feeling that they have for having neglected their passions and their purpose along the way, right? But I want to end this thought by saying, when this one man retired from work, I think it was still in 2019, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I think he was retiring, and one young colleague of mine went to him and said, hey, Mr. Weiser, you're leaving the bank and I am just starting out my career. What advice would you say to me or give to me? And Mr. Weiser says, you know, I am leaving now with a watch as a gift and lunch with my team as a farewell. I realized that in all my years at the bank, I closed deals for the bank and none for myself.
Oh my.
Woo!
Wow.
Shivers down our spine. Every time I share the story, I get goosebumps.
Wow.
Because he said to my colleague, whatever you do, close deals for yourself. And this is such a widespread sentiment that a lot of people who have made it, they've got the money, they've got the houses, they've got the success. I mean, whatever term that success is measured, right? And they say, I've done it all, I have it all. But the one thing that would really wake me up in the morning, giving with vitality and vigor, I didn't get to do. And I wish I had pursued that. So people who are well accomplished and successful, at the end of the road, come to realize that they shouldn't have neglected their purpose and their passion. And those who take their passion along actually realize that they did better, way better than those who just had to pay bills. And those who carried their purpose along realize that not only did they do better for themselves, they touched lives along the way. So we can neglect it in pursuit of money, but it will always catch up with us. It always does. And I also want to leave the thought that pursuing a life of purpose, and if you notice me very well, I don't use the word passion because I think passion is a companion to purpose, right? When I talk about purpose, I'm talking about the thing you were actually designed to do, the thing you were made to do, and our passions obviously play a part. I just want to encourage somebody who's like, I want the money. I want to say your money is actually in your design, in the thing that God ordained for you to do. So pursuing purpose is not neglecting money. The two work very well hand in hand. But I guess at the end of the day, whatever you do, do not close deals for your organization and none for yourself.
Beautiful. Wow. Man, you know, I feel like I've been sitting with you for the last hour. Thank you so much, Mpumi. I do hope that our listeners as well have enjoyed this conversation and, of course, making an impact in your lives out there. Mpumi Mbonane, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. At least I come to some chunugi in the coming week. But I'll make sure to prepare something for our very last segment, which is really about having and the nobility of having and what that can do for us.
Oh, beautiful, man. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Bye, Zama. Thanks for the chat.
Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.